First of all, I would like to thank Steven for cooking our dinner, that guy right there in the back. You did an awesome job. You can't imagine, I'm sure we're not an easy group to cook for, so job well done. And now we'll all go through the seven stages of grief because dinner is over, right? I had such a good time today. My friend Wanda's going to help me. She's going to, when I want to read some stuff, Wanda's going to help me. We were buddies back in Colorado, and then I showed up, and we didn't know each one was going to be here today. And so that's kind of cool. So she's going to help me because I felt like I couldn't take a drink last night or whatever. Well, not like take a drink, but, you know, like take a drink of water. So she's going to help me with some reading if I need so I can catch my breath and whatever. I had such a good time today, and it was so great. Last night I was a little wound up, and so that meeting that happened last night after the main session, it was just really beautiful, and I love how, like, the leader set a topic, and everybody kept on the topic, and then some people spouted out what their intention was for the weekend. You know, I was like, this is really cool, you know, and I loved format of the meeting that was like, you know, our focus is not on our problems, but our solution to the problem and what we want to do about it. And I think that's something that, especially where I'm from, I mean, you don't hear that a lot. And when we try to change the format or something, our meeting goes hog wild. Like, it's a crazy sort of, you know, it's crazy. And I've seen some, what are they called? The group conscience meetings that are more like a, you know, it's like, wait a second, what are we doing? Like, we're not supposed to be yelling at each other about, you know, whether or not we have child care. Do you know what I mean? Like, anyway, but I just think we all stand to learn a lot from each other, and it was nice for me to sit, and it was nice for me to absorb, and it was nice for me to hear from you, and it was nice for me to remember that we're all the same, you know? And I just heard some really beautiful things today, and I want to thank you for that. I really feel like I didn't even need to have, like, okay, take a breath with me, be with me, love me, let me love you, because I feel it. Do you know what I mean? Like, you guys are a really, really awesome bunch of people, and I don't feel like it's me again. You know, I feel like we're all the same, and I really appreciate that, and I love that, and I think you're awesome. So how do we do? I was really, took a big fat nap this afternoon, because I was really tired, and I want to try to share with you. So last night you heard how I got to OA, heard some stuff that's happened to me in the past 20 years, and then today I thought, because I went to sleep and I said a little prayer before I went to sleep about what I want to do is try to tell you the things that have helped me. You know how we all have things and situations and people and places? Like, there's all things that we've threaded together, you know, that sort of have made the fabric of who we are in recovery. You know, so I went to sleep with that intention, and I woke up with that intention, and so I did bring my books, and I do want to talk in my books a little bit, because I want to tell you what really, really helped me when I was brand spanking new, and the things that have stuck with me also 20 years later, the things that have stuck with me and continued to be a foundation, I guess, for how I work the program. So the first gal that I worked with, and I've only ever had, I've had three sponsors in OA in 20 years. I've called my food into some people, and I've had some other people help me. And what I like to say about sponsorship is it's not marriage. Get one, get two, get three, get however many you want, right? Like, we always have such, we don't think we can hurt someone's feelings, or, oh, I don't want to, you know, and I've never fired any, whatever. I don't even know what that means. Nobody's ever fired me, and I've never been fired, and I wouldn't ever work with someone who used that word. Never, right? Like, I was told I'll love you till you can love yourself, and, you know, let's call that dinner and move on. Like, there's no, you know, there's never been a real rigid kind of thing for me, and I just I think I've been real lucky, but I also, you know, when we get some, you know, when I used to hear people talk about their low self-esteem, I'm like, what the hell's that? Like, I aspire to my low self-esteem, right? Like, I don't even know what it, I can't even talk about it enough to have low self-esteem. You know, because I didn't even know what it fucking felt like. I felt like the crack in the sidewalk. And it doesn't matter. You can say, like, oh, God, you look like this, and oh, you're the. It doesn't matter. Like, we all have the same insides. It doesn't matter what we look like on the outside. you know, it doesn't matter who you are or who I am or what I look like or what, and we all try to pin it on that, because I've had people say to me over the years, like, you know, this is so easy for you. This is so easy. No, it is not. I would rather, like, I don't even want it. I would rather crawl out of my skin than stand up and be vulnerable in front of a group of people, you know? And again, the whole acting thing, that's a whole another deal. Assume another character, be somebody else, do something that's not, and that's not me, right? So standing here in front of you, I had to sleep all afternoon just to be able to do it, okay? Because it's not easy. And giving your insights, and I know that's why, like, if you're in this room and you still isolate, and I know you do, right? I know you do. It's a miracle that you're here. It's a miracle that I'm here. And it's a miracle that I'm not in the, you know, I was the girl who had, in my little guest house, that little guest house I told you about last night, like when I hit my relapse, I parked my car down the street. And this is the same person who's standing here. This is the same person who flew across the country for free and for fun to stand at a fucking podium and talk about her feelings, okay? This is the same, I just want to, you need to know this is the same person. So this is the same person who parked her car down the street or around the corner so that nobody would know she was there, who turned all the lights. I mean, in our first step, we hid, we procrastinated, we ate. I stayed in all day. I went to the grocery store at 9 o'clock at night. I couldn't do life on life's terms. Like I couldn't be out in the daytime. And I had a completely alcoholic, and again, you don't get to compare yourself to this, right? You don't get to do that because everything's different for all of us, right? I'm sorry. I hope I don't end up taking all my clothes off because for right now, all my jewelry's bugging me, so everything's come off in the jewelry department. So anyway, we'll just hope this clothes stay on. Hey, it's Saturday night, people. Bellingham, Washington. It's getting a little crazy. Oh my God. Anyway, so I would go out at night and I would eat whatever. I would watch television because television was my best friend. And then I would sleep all day long. And then, if anybody knocked on the door, I had this kind of a walk-in closet type thing or the bath, and it was a person from Overeaters Anonymous. Like, and when I look back at that now, I lost a job. I had a different job waiting tables. I lost that job. And it was totally what they talk about in the Big Book. My phone was disconnected because I didn't pay the bill, right? It was an alcoholic or compulsive overeating, call it whatever, bottom. I mean, I was, and a person from Overeaters Anonymous, the woman whose wedding, because I'm looping back in some stories for you, the woman who I was in the wedding, when I fitted for the dress, I was a size 6, and when the wedding rolled around, I was a 22, 24. So it was that girl who went to my landlord, who got a key, and she came in my house, and she got me, and she put me in the shower, and she took me to a doctor. Same person, right? Same person. It's really important, so important to know that. And I don't, like, I'm not afraid, like, I can't live in that fear, but I just kind of stay on nodding terms with who that is, right? Because it's the same person. You know, and when some of you spoke today, and when somebody talks to me about relapse, I get it. I get it, and I feel it, and I love you, and it hurts me, you know, because that was just horrible. It's horrible. The pain of compulsive overeating and hiding and procrastinating and eating is the worst pain I've ever felt in my life. You know, so I feel you. I really do. So where do I want to start? So Wanda, we're going to read. So, okay, so they didn't have, when the two people who helped me first came into OA, they didn't have OA literature. You've heard a lot of people say that. You've heard a lot of our beautiful old timers tell us that they didn't have so they worked out of the Big Book. So whenever I would call Judy with, I can't decide. And somebody said, I heard somebody say today, like, I didn't mention food. Well, I'm not going to talk about specific foods, but I'm going to tell you what I did when I called somebody and said, I can't stop eating blank. Or whenever I eat blank, I can't stop thinking about it, right? I get this mental obsession. And then I turn into a fucking monster, right? So I'm going to have Wanda read for you. And this is just out of, and anything that I'm going to read is are books that you have. Okay, there's absolutely nothing, there's nothing I'm going to read out of that's not our conference-approved literature. And the only thing I will do for myself, and you guys can do, I just know that the AA people don't want us to change those words when we read at our meetings. So that's all I'll ask Wanda just to read. It is we are going to read the word alcohol when we read out of the alcoholic book, because I think that's what they want us to do. So this is just out of the doctor's opinion. And this is what my buddy Judy, my sponsor, would tell me. She would say, I want you to read, but when you hear this, I want you to think about substitute, like think about it in your head. Because for me, it wasn't just food. For me, it was whatever that food was. Like I would read this, what Wanda's about to read, and I would put that word of that food, of whatever that was, in this little deal. It's starting on, and I'm not going to tell you the number because it's XXVI, whatever. It's the doctor's opinion. And then I'll tell you when to stop, too. Thank you so much. Okay.
The doctor writes, the subject,
right here in the yellow.
Oh, okay. Of course, an alcoholic ought to be freed from his physical craving for liquor, and this often requires a definite hospital procedure before psychological measures can be of maximum benefit.
And I'm just going to interject and say that when they want to cure them of that allergy, they suggested that they be hospitalized. So think about that and whatever substance that you put in that sentence. Okay.
We believe and so suggested a few years ago that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy, that the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. And once having formed the habit and found they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve.
Stay with me right here, because my question is, how familiar does that sound to you, right? How familiar does that sound? You eat something, and again, whatever that was, it creates that allergic reaction, and then you feel your problems pile up on you and become astonishingly difficult to solve. Right? And for those of us that think that food and alcohol, that is totally different, I'm suggesting to you, and again, only a suggestion, clear as a bell. Clear as a bell. Okay, now read this little part, and then I'll let you sit down. I love you, Wanda.
Thanks. Love you, too. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol.
Oh, really? Listen. God, that feels good. I love how that feels. I think I'm going to eat it.
The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontented, unless they can again experience that sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few drinks, drinks which they see others taking with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, and the phenomenon of craving develops, they pass through the well-known stages of a spree, emerging remorseful with a firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over and over and over. Oh, maybe not that many overs. And unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery.
Read that last sentence one more time.
This is repeated over and over again. Unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of her recovery.
Thank you. I mean, that is, I read that. And then again, we would talk about this gal, Judy, and I would talk about that whatever I was thinking about, there's a mental obsession of the mind, a disease of the body, obsession of the mind. Whatever I was obsessing about in my head, I put in my body, it created this allergic reaction, and then I couldn't stop it. And see, and that's why a lot of this, like, there's no shame in that for me. Like, I know, and I could list them for you, and I don't really care to, and it's not that it's a big secret, or I'm not spiritually evolved, because I'm really not, trust me. I'm so not. But it just, when it puts stuff in our head, you know what they are for you. That's all that it's important. Like when you meet, like first things first, right? First things first, and you can yak around this till the cows come home, but you know what those foods are for you. You know what they are, and what I became very invested in, because I wanted to talk about what I ate all the time. You know, all the time. Like, I wanted to tell you what I ate and then see what you were eating, because I knew there had to be some secret thing. Like, what do you eat? What do you eat? What do you eat? That's all I asked people when I got, what do you eat? And then maybe if the, and if I thought they were all boring, it would be like, oh, let me go somewhere else and ask these people what they eat. Because there has to be a right thing, right? You're obviously doing it better. And Judy would, and Judy would go like, and I loved how she said my name too, Rhonda. She was like, let's get more invest. Like, we figured out your food plan. Like, let's stop talking about what we're eating. Let's not put things in our body that create that mental obsession, that create that allergy of the body. And let's start thinking about a psychic change. I'm like, I don't want a psychic. I think I'm fine. Right? And she really, really, really told me and helped me embrace the fact. Because see, when I first got here, I didn't want a psychic change. I wanted a perfect food plan and a thin body. Or better yet, to eat whatever I wanted and have a thin body. That would be even better, you know? And so the psychic change. So again, self-check. How psychically different are you from when you first got here? Right? Have you allowed that? And I heard a beautiful example when this gal talked this morning about and she has had a psychic change, by the way. I don't know where you are, don't remember your name, but I'm telling you, if you heard the story about driving, if you heard the woman telling the story about driving, how she used to be on the road, and then how she had a psychic change. That's a spiritual experience. You know, the growth and maintenance of a spiritual experience. When you used to be a complete rageaholic on the street, and then somebody cuts you off, and you smile and wave at them, and let them go, right? That's a complete psychic, and I heard that, and I was like, oh, because I wanted to talk about the psychic change tonight, and I was like, that is a perfect example of the psychic change, when you are completely different. When I chose, and I didn't mean to do this either, because I just kept, and I also believe, I don't believe you have to master anything here, I just think you have to keep trying really hard, you know? I don't feel as if I've mastered anything in 20 years, but I try harder than anybody I've ever known in these rooms. I really do. I try really hard, and I take suggestions, and I still, like when I called my sponsor yesterday, I'm like, tell me what to do. Get on your knees, say the serenity prayer, put on your clothes, right? Like, I just wanted somebody to give me directions. So I think staying humble and taking directions, and whenever we think we got it, I think that's a big red light for me. Like, that's when I know, if I think I've got it, then my ego. See, I'm glad that I'm terrified to stand and talk in front of you, because if I wasn't terrified, it would be like, hey, let me tell you. So that's my ego, right? I'm glad I want to crawl out of my skin. You know, I'm glad that it's painful. I really am, and I have sort of a pained look on my face because I know that I do. You know, like, because it means I'm not, I know when I'm not in my ego. I know what that feels like, you know? So anyway, so psychic change. So I had this little list, and then I would, whenever I had a problem with that food, I would read these paragraphs out of the doctor's opinion about that particular food. And it's just a great thing to do. It's a great thing to do. So if that speaks to you at all, please do it. And I want to walk through our little, I'm going to keep going. The very first, it's even before our first step. And this is your OA 12 and 12. Mine's just a really old copy of that, but it's our OA 12 and 12. And in the very, before it even starts in the steps, it's the introduction, which I would never read the introduction to anything, you know. In OA we have, and again, I think it's just important to remember, because all I'm doing, I'm not trying to tell anybody that they're doing it wrong, and it comes out like that a lot, so I just want you to know that that's not what I'm trying to do. I'm just trying to tell you how I was raised in the program and how, because I hated myself. Okay, now I'm going to cry again. I hated myself. I hated myself for whatever reason. I don't know why, you know? And I heard a lot today that the reasons for that are unimportant too, but, and sure, it could have been because of the way I was raised. Sure, it could have been because I was rejected for 25 years in Hollywood. I don't know, right? Like, it doesn't matter. It just, the important thing is that I absolutely hated myself, and I had no care for myself at all. So when I got together with these people in OA, thank you, sorry about that, I should have, hey, plan ahead, why should you do that? Why, you think you'll need tissues when you talk, what? Okay, so, Judy would tell me about this all the time, because I would try to tell Judy that I was doing, you know, I think if I started eating this and then I started doing this and then I started doing it, I mean, we're in Hollywood too, where all the wacky stuff's coming out. So it's like, hey, I'm going to do this and then I'm going to do this. And Judy would always tell me, and this is in our beautiful introduction to the 12 steps. In OA, we have no programs of diet and exercise, no scales, no magic pills. What we do offer is far greater than any of these things, a fellowship where we find and share the healing power of love. So what I became very interested in 20 years ago when I came back from relapse at 260 pounds is trying to figure out some way to let you love me, because I had never known how to do that. I didn't know how to do that. And again, doesn't matter what I look like, doesn't matter what you look like, doesn't matter if you're a man, doesn't matter if I'm, doesn't matter. I didn't know how to let you do that. And I thought it was awesome and hilarious, because I thought I had this like kind of superpower capability, as we all do at some point in our lives. Like if you're sitting here, you probably think you've had a superpower capability at some point, because addicts were kind of crazy like that. And I thought that I was awesome because nobody ever hurt me. You couldn't hurt me because I didn't let you close enough to hurt me. Okay, so second meeting, meeting number two, I heard this woman, and a lot of people read out of Freedom from Bondage, and a lot of, that's the story in the back of your big book, in both, in any edition you have of your big book, I think she's still in there. And this is the story that most people talk about when they talk about praying for someone. It's that famous, and it's helped a lot of people, and it speaks to a lot of people, and it's about praying for people that you resent, okay? What this story spoke to me at meeting number two, because the reason that nobody had ever hurt me was because of what, I mean, and I'm gonna let Wanda read this, because it's the first part of her story, not the last part. And I got it bracketed too.
I am an only child, and when I was 7 years old, my parents separated very abruptly. With no explanation at all, I was taken from my home in Florida to my grandparents' home in the Midwest. My mother went to a nearby city to go to work, and my father, being an alcoholic, simply went. My grandparents were strangers to me, and I remember being lonely, terrified, and hurt. In time, I concluded that the reason I was hurt was because I loved my parents, and I concluded, too, that if I never allowed myself to love anybody or anything, I could never be hurt again. It became a second nature for me to remove myself from anything or anybody I found myself growing fond of. I grew up believing that one had to be totally self-sufficient, for one never dared to depend on another human being. I thought that life was a pretty simple thing. You simply made a plan for your life based upon what you wanted, and then you needed only the courage to go after it.
So I don't know if that speaks to you guys at all, but that when I heard that read at a meeting, and this, and I remember, interestingly enough, the people who changed my life when I was young in recovery, I remember their names, and this is a gal named Jan. And I don't know what happened to Jan, but Jan read that, and I was convinced, like, because it was like somebody was reading my insides. Because I was like, I thought that I had to be totally self-sufficient. And I don't want to get entangled with it. And dating anybody, like all that messy stuff like that, I didn't want anything to do with that. Somebody wanted to go out with me, but I was like, oh, get away from me. I didn't want anybody to mess with me. I didn't want to get messed up in those tangled, like those people crying at the meet. And look who's a big fat crier, right? Like I cry all the time. It's ridiculous. And I was repulsed by people's feelings. When I got here, I was absolutely, and I was just sharing with a gal out in the lobby, and I called Judy up because I heard this, and then I just wanted to crawl out of my skin, and then I'm like, well, God, I can't go binge, and then I would binge after the meeting, so I was like, damn it, the hell's wrong with me? You know, I'd call her up, and I would just tell her, too, because I was like, you know, you can't lie, and I was like, well, I ate that, I binged after this meeting, because I can't handle people wanting to touch me, and talk to me, and hug me, and bleh, right? And Judy go, and I love this. See, this is how I was sponsored. I just want you to know the beauty in how I was sponsored. Judy, my sponsor, she didn't say go early and whatever. Judy said go to the meeting late and leave early. Because I couldn't handle the intimacy. I didn't have that in my world. So it repulsed me. So I had to let myself be the person. And as a perfectionist, okay, because even though I was 240 pounds, I was perfect, even though, you know, whatever, still perfect. But I wanted to be perfect. I didn't want to leave early and go late. But see, but my sponsor gave me, like, you know, I had the permission to be human. Like, I couldn't digest all that intimacy, and it made me want to go hurt myself, and it made me want to go binge, and it made me want to, I had to take it. And she would say, like, when people tell you to take it slow, right? Like, take this, you know, take it easy, right? That's not our deal. We don't want to take it easy. You know, and I'll tell you a little story, and I'm probably going to talk a little bit more about Roseanne in the morning, but when I took my 10-year birthday candle, it was along about year 4 or 5, and this was all coming back after relapse. So I'd been around a lot longer, but I had relapsed in 94 and came back. And I heard Roseanne on some sort, it was cassette tapes at the time, you know, those, you know, plug those guys into the tape player in your car, or your Walkman on the... And I heard Roseanne, and I'd never seen her. I didn't know what she looked like. But she was talking about how they came up with the words compulsive overeater. Like, because she had gone to a Gamblers Anonymous meeting, and interestingly enough, she and her husband took a friend of theirs that he had a problem. Because, see, Roseanne was all about helping other people too, right? She was people pleaser too. They were taking somebody who needed help. They saw Gamblers Anonymous on the TV, and then they knew their friend needed some help, so they took him to this meeting. And that's when she had her spiritual experience and said, these people do with gambling the same thing that I do with food. So that's how we started. Like, that's how collective we were born, right? And then I heard her on this tape talk about, she couldn't just be, like, couldn't call it, like, just overeaters, like gamblers, drinkers, whatever. That the word compulsive, like, we're the only ones that have, and, you know, and again, we're not supposed to say we're unique and special, blah, right? But we're the only ones with the word compulsive in our title. So I've spent a lot of time investigating that word, because I am compulsive. Like, when you can't lay down and there's a dirty dish in your sink, like, okay. And now we have a lot more tools and resources available to us that explain compulsive behavior. I highly recommend you, you know, have a little look at it, because compulsive is part of our deal. And I didn't realize that I had that particular problem, you know? So I've paid, if I start to get, and I know you're probably going to know, because we're the same person, I know you're going to know, because see, it's like a dial, and I feel the dial when it's turned up too high. And I know when I've entered into that energy, when I'm in that, I'm like, whoa, I gotta bring this down. I gotta dial it down. So I modulate, and I don't know. That's how I do that for myself. And I heard Roseanne talk about it, and I heard her talk about that compulsive energy, and that how between all the people that she knew that were coming to her meetings, that they all shared that compulsivity. So anyway, so I just thought that was very interesting. I wanted to pass it on to you. And then when I stood up, there was this meeting. I'm getting hot. This dress might come off. I'm not even kidding. So, having a heat flash. So, I go on my 10th birthday, and I go to the meeting that's in Beverly Hills. Okay, it's called Serenity Sunday, and I never went to the meeting because I didn't know if I was good enough to go to Beverly Hills to the Overeaters Anonymous meeting. So, on my 10th birthday, I was like, damn it. I'm going to take my candle at the Serenity Sunday in the park, at Roxbury Park. So I go, and I had worked out my little speech, and you have to go 30 minutes early to sign in to take your candle and whatever. There's a lot of people there. And I stood up, and this woman had introduced, like, the woman, because I wasn't listening a lot then either, and so people were talking, and I wasn't listening, so I'm sure she said her name, the person who was given the candles, but I didn't hear it, because I was worried about my speech. And I got up to take my candle, and I had just had that whole big thing about Roseanne, and that we're compulsive, and that I'm compulsive, and I don't know what I would do if this program wasn't here, and I don't know what I would be doing if she hadn't gone to that meeting. And I just went on, and because I had a spiritual experience about Roseanne and the whole thing about us being compulsive overeaters, and I said out loud about how much that meant to me, and then the woman who gave me, and then they sing, and I get my candle, and she takes my hand, and she goes, I'm Roseanne. And I go, oh, it's so nice to meet you, Roseanne. And she goes, no, I'm Roseanne. And I'm like, oh my God! You know, It was one of the coolest, and I felt like I did live in LA, and I waited on a lot of famous people, and I can just tell you that moment, like that, and I'm so happy to like look you in the eyes and share that moment with you, because it was without a doubt, bar none, the coolest moment of my life. And I've had some pretty, you know, I've been around the block a couple times, you know, and I've done some things, you know, that I'd love to tell you about another time, another setting. But that was the coolest, like, because this program, flat out, without a doubt, saved my life. You know, I might have figured out, I don't even want to know. I don't know. I can't even pontificate about what would have happened if that guy hadn't come to my house. Yeah, I don't want to know, because I don't know what I would have done, because every solution I have ever found in the past 20 years, I have found here. So sure, have I been to therapy? Okay, yeah, but it's when a sponsor says, like, you know what? I think you might want to go get some more help with that, you know? And I direct people too, because we can't give away what we don't have, you know? We can't give away what we don't have. There's people who have experience with things, and if I don't think I can help them with that, or if it, because I know how to get somebody, like, if you want to get from point A to point B without shoving a donut in your face, I'm your girl. Outside of that, see, I don't try to do here what, I'm not a licensed psychiatrist, I'm not a, you know, and it's really important that we recognize that, you know, it's real, because I think we try to give away stuff here that we probably shouldn't be giving away here, but anyway, all my solutions have been here, and when I met that woman, I thought I was going to faint, it was just one of the greatest moments of my life, and so I just wanted to share that with you, and now I want to go into step one, because we're going to go back to, I'm going to remind you again about that, disease of the, obsession of the mind, allergy of the body, right? So I'm going to take you, remember the doctor's opinion thing with that. And then, again, when you get confused about your food, when you think that it's like, I don't know what to do, I don't know how to do it, and you call and you're sick, like, I don't know. So this is just the bottom of step two, or the bottom of page two, it's one sentence, and it's the bottom of page two and the top of page three of your OA 12 and 12, step one. Clearly, comma, if we are to live free of the bondage of compulsive eating, we must abstain from all foods and eating behaviors which cause us problems. I'm going to read it one more time just for myself. Clearly, if we are to live free from the bondage of compulsive eating, we must abstain from all foods and eating behaviors which cause us problems. It's just clear as a damn bell. And so sure, when somebody calls me and they're like, I ate blah, 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 blah. Do I shame them? No. Do I tell them I won't sponsor them anymore? No, I don't. But if you've told me you want to lose weight, because we're going to talk about this. We're going to talk about this because we have to. Because I ask you when you start working with me, what do you want? And if you want to lose weight and you call in this thing that's clearly not going to help you lose weight, I'm like, okay, you can eat it. Eat it till the, eat it. Eat it, smoke it, drink it, whatever. Right? And call me and tell me about it. And I'll live it. But is that going to support what you told me you wanted? Does that support a weight losing abstinence? You told me you wanted a weight losing abstinence. We worked out a weight losing food plan. You know, so it's just about like, and that's the honesty, and I don't do it ugly. I'm not, I would never be ugly to anybody here. I love compulsive overeaters, and I'm not going to be mean or harsh, especially after 20 years, because I'm kind of sick of talking about food too. Okay. I really am, like, you get, and I've had to tell some people, and not because it's just 20 years later, like, I don't really want to talk about food anymore, you know, because it just there's nothing exciting about it for me. It doesn't, you know, anyway, so I just tell people to do this thing that's in our book, and you know, and like an eating behavior. So, and see, and again, you can go all around the, and I don't even want to waste precious minutes even talking about what that even means, right? You know what eating behaviors cause you problems. Anything that happens at 4:30 in the afternoon at my office is not for me, people. It's just not. Nothing that's ever happened at 4:30 at my office has been good for me. Nothing. So what do? I set it out, I clean it up, and I have a cup of tea. because I learned in Overeaters Anonymous that, you know, people who have self-esteem drink tea. So I make a cup of tea, right? I still judge it, like, oh God, everybody's like eating cake and drinking champagne and I'm drinking tea, right? But you know what? That feels really good. It feels really good because nothing is good for me at 4:30 in the afternoon. Nothing happens for me after 10 o'clock at night. That's a party I don't go to. You know, it just is. And I used to say all the time, like, I don't know how I was 260 pounds. I only ate one meal, but it started at 10 at night and ended at 4 in the morning. I was a night eater. I ate all night long. Right? And then I learned that we eat to, you know, and that's when I saw those little notebooks that y'all have out there, too, those teeny tiny notebooks, because Judy had me get a teeny tiny notebook. And she was like, you know, I think that you're eating in the night. See, again, there was no shame in this. Judy just suggested that maybe I was eating at nighttime, and that's exactly the tone she had in her voice. Maybe you're eating at the nighttime because of feelings that come up during the day. And I was like, what? Feelings? The hell? So she told me to get a little notebook, 79-cent notebook at the Walgreens, and start writing down feelings. I didn't know that there was, I didn't know that the only feeling I had was feeling fat, okay? And I hated myself. So those are the only, fat and self-hatred were the only two things that I really had mastered. I didn't know that you could feel lonely. I never felt lonely, because when you overeat, you don't really feel lonely. Especially with certain things. Like, they just make you feel like you're, you know, in a whole another time zone or something, right? So I didn't feel lonely at all. Anyway, so there's feelings that are associated with those, you know. And so I started taking a little, and sure enough, the more I processed stuff during the day, the more I would sleep, and the sleep got a little longer. And then there was this thing I had never met until I was 28 years old called breakfast. What was that, right? I never had that. I didn't even know what that was. It's like, oh wow, there's people, they're out, it's the morning time. And they're eating like a civilized, they're eating like an omelet, you know? It was amazing to me. I'd never had breakfast ever because all I did was like, I would binge all night and then I just had to starve myself at least till like 5 o'clock in the afternoon because you have to make up for it, right? And the other thing I think, this could be helpful to you or could not be helpful to you, I don't know, but it was very helpful to me. And that was, especially with this not starting over thing, because I'm going to talk about that a little bit too, was that each thing is independently of each other. If I think I undereat at one meal, like I don't make up for anything. Everything's independent. My dinner tonight, regardless of what I thought about it, is my dinner tonight, and it's not going to influence my breakfast tomorrow. Each meal is independent in and of itself, and I look forward to it no matter what it is. Okay, and then I let it go. Like it's not like, okay, I didn't eat too much because when anything enters up into my head, well, you know what? I didn't really get like that guy served my chicken. And so-and-so got a bigger piece. When I start anything like that, you know, and I wanted some of that and I didn't get it, so, you know, I'll make up for it later on is all I'm saying. If I feel deprived in any way, shape, form, or fashion, and I think this is across the board too with that. See, and I think anorexics do it. I think bulimia, I think we all do it in a different way. We all do the same behavior, and that is deprivation leads to overcompensation at some point. So I do not deprive myself. I try not to, and I definitely don't get into my head thinking that I have, you know, because then I get, it may be next week, it may be the next meal, it may be 2 years from now, but I will make up for it. Okay. That I've learned, you know, I've really, really, really learned that. Okay, we've only gotten as far as step one. Oh, this is great. This is so awesome. Read this last little thing for me, too. And just the ones I highlighted is great. And this is at the very end of step one.
As long as we believe that we already know what is best for us, we cling to our habitual ways of thinking and acting.
Read that line one more time.
Uh-huh. As long as we believe that we already know what is best for us, we cling to our habitual ways of thinking and acting. In step one, we acknowledge this truth about ourselves. Our current methods of managing have not been successful, and we need to find a new approach to life. Once we have become teachable, we can give up old thought and behavior patterns which have failed us in the past, beginning with our attempts to control our eating and our weight.
And I think the operative word there for me, because I was not teachable. I was not teachable in any way. And I thought that my even though I've outlined those beautiful coping mechanisms that I had, I still thought that that worked in some way. You know, and once I got here, and there's been a lot of studies done, because we addicts are not, you know, and I don't, you know, I'm not going to promote outside literature or condone it or whatever, but there's a lot of stuff now. They know a lot more about addicts than they did long time ago, you know, and there's a lot of stuff because we're, it is, talk about cunning, baffling, and powerful. And I've never been envious or jealous. Like, I lived out there in Hollywood, people are rich and famous and all that. I was never jealous of anything. I'll tell you what I've been, when somebody doesn't know what addiction is, that's what I'm jealous of. I'm still jealous of people who just don't, who leave a half of whatever right on their plate, you know, or they lose their cigarettes, you know what I mean, or lose whatever. Like, why did you do that? How do you not know where your drink, your smoke, your, you know, because I am such a, and I had the distinct pleasure of, it really was a distinct pleasure for me because I got to play this like very cross-addicted, like at any given moment in this particular play, I was tracking a crack pipe, a cigarette, a drink, and some other, and it was awesome. And then people would go like, how did you do that? And it's like, you can't even tell people. It's like, I can tell a room full of compulsive overeaters, like that was a cakewalk for me. It looked like it was like this really hot, like dramatic, and I loved it too because I got all this attention because I was so dramatic. So good, right? But all you do is you light, any of you could have done the same thing because you just light your inner addict on fire and have a fucking party. You know? It's like any of you could have done that because you're just like, hey, man, I should just light it all up and watch it burn, you know? It was awesome. And then I would sleep like a baby every day because this is like this exorcism of, you know, it was great. It was so totally awesome. So I think, so once we have become teachable. So that's just a little question, you know, first things first, how long you've been here. Are we teachable? You know, I still try to let people teach me things. And every time I go and talk like this at something, do you know what I do within the next 2 or 3 months? I go and I sit right there in something, right? Because I don't want to get too, meaning I sit in that chair. I think we all sit in each other. I saw your, Carlos, I saw your face. What is she talking about? See, you could be an actor too, so I could read your gesture from right here. So it's important, I think, that we sit in every seat on the bus, you know? So when I sit in this seat, then I'm going to go sit in that seat, and then I'm going to go sit at the registration table, and then I'm, you know, I might go help somebody cook a meal. Like, I just think it's important to rotate that, you know, if I stand here, I have to go sit there, if that makes any sense. Because it's so important to be teachable and to not think that we know what's best for us or what's best for you, because we get into that little game in sponsorship too, right? You're not doing what I said. See, that's our ego. That's why I had to really, when I did a fourth step on my sponsorship, because I want to be a better sponsor. I want to be a better sponsor. And see, I have to be humble, and I have to look at that, and I have to know that my current methods aren't working. They weren't working. Shit was going, something was happening. I got to look at my part of that. You know, what is going on there? You know? And so I don't get to know what's best. And there's a lot of times that I thought that I did. You know? Okay. How we doing? Is everybody good? Are you with me? Okay. This is, there was one thing I really wanted to find, and I hope I find it in here. And it's I'm just going to trust that I will. This is in step three. I'm going to go to step three now, because this was a big thing for me. There's a sentence, and it's a, wait, let me hand me my glasses. I just need to make sure that this is a complete sentence. No, okay, we give up fear and indecision. I just love that phrase. So it's not a complete sentence. It's we give up fear and indecision. So it's, we have to stop being scared, however we do it, right? So how do we give up fear? And I think that's just moving forward. Instead of when your sponsor says, you know, I suggest that you do blah, 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 make a fear list, do whatever. Like, yeah, I don't sit on that anymore. I do it. I do it immediately, and and giving up the fear, I think, means acting, because sometimes we don't know how to do that. How do I just give up fear? Well, it means act in faith. That's how you give up fear. Just take your action and trust, like have my faith, have your sponsor's faith, have something else that is gonna drive you other than your own self-obsessed fear, because self-obsessed fear keeps us completely paralyzed, I think, in, like, if I don't bust a move, then I don't have to be accountable for anything. And if I'm not accountable for anything, you can't call me out on anything. And if you don't call me out on anything, I get to keep doing whatever the hell I want to do. And then maybe call you next Sunday. And go, hey, I'm still trying to do this. I'm truly trying to not overeat, and I'm kind of thinking about the step. Nope. You know, you're laughing because you do it, right? Like, oh, I can't let another week go by without calling my sponsor. Hey, what are you doing, right? It's what we do. Let me just coast along and see how the little bit. I did it too, so I know. I do it sometimes now, so I know. You know, I totally got your number. And that's exactly what I just talked about. Here's another sentence. We no longer simply do what we feel like doing or what we think we can get away with. Like, cut it out, right? And I love tonight, too. Somebody else is dishing it out. You don't get to pick it tonight. You don't get to dish your own portion, right? I love that. We don't get to do what we feel like doing, and we don't get to do what we can get away with. And we didn't get to do it at dinner, and I loved it. I thought it was awesome. I embraced that. I thought that was great. And I think we should do it at our convention, Annie, if you know what I think about it. Now, the thing that I really hope I can find... I found it. It's in step four, and this was the other bit, really huge thing. This was a big deal to me when I did my first inventory, and a really big, and it continues to be one of the most important things that has helped me in all these years. And this is the one complete sentence that I was looking for. We must, and must is in the italics, okay? That means it's important. Joe and Charlie used to say that that's the squiggly writing, and the squiggly writing is very important. The word must is in squiggly writing. We must change if we are to recover. Period. Complete sentence. We must change if we are to recover. And we can go, like, I'm with you. I'm totally with you. You heard how I grew up, right? I don't like change. So what do we want to do? Call up, oh God, I don't like change. Change is hard for me. I don't, like, I'm afraid of change. And nothing stays the same. I did it. I sang that whole, but it's okay. We can cry, and I will hold your hand for a little bit and listen to you cry for a little bit about that, right? But then you got to change. Then we got to change. We have to change if we want to recover. So it's like, give up this little seat. You know, I got to give up this really comfortable middle of the night eating pattern that isolates me from the world and my fellows in order to have this, you know? And sometimes I don't like this, you know? Bad face, hurts, intimate. You're looking at me and I'm having a hot flash, okay? It's not, you know, it's cooled off a little bit though. I do want you to know, you probably feel it. I feel it. But we must change if we are to recover. And then the next thing that it tells us is that change begins with honesty. So whatever you need to be honest about. So again, first things first, like, okay, so if we must change, and I like to simplify this, like I like to make this the most simple thing ever. So if we must change to recover and change begins with honesty, what do you need to be honest about? Or no, like right now, what you're thinking about something right now. That you may, and you may not need to be honest about anything right now. You may, like, you might be cool with that, you know, but if there's something, like, my suggestion to you and my prayer for you and my hope for you and my dream for you is that if you have something in there that you need to be honest with somebody about, don't take it to sleep. Look at everybody sitting in this room, right? Grab a hand and say, you know, I got to get something off my chest. And you know what? You'll sleep better. Your food will be cleaner. You know, because that's how this work, that's how it, and if we approach ourselves, and I think so many times, and I'm pointing to my belly as if you can see it, like so many times I want this to be about from the outside in, you know, because don't think I didn't go, and it was hilarious too, because I had to call somebody. I'm going to tell you exactly what happened to me Thursday night, night before I came here. I was like, what am I going to wear? oh my God, and I had all these clothes out on my bed, and I got my iPhone, I checked the weather, I'm like, fuck, I don't know if it's going to be cold, I don't know if it's going to be raining, I don't know if it's going to be thick, and I let that go for about 10 minutes, because I'll let anything, I'll go down any fucking road for 10 minutes, with you, with myself, with some, and then I'm just like, okay, this has to stop. Right? So I call up, it wasn't my sponsor, because she gets enough out of me, if you can even imagine what that's like to be my sponsor, but so I've got other people that I call, right? Because we can't give this all. Do you think one person can handle this? No, they can't. I'm not going to call my sponsor with 34 years and three programs and tell her I'm having a fashion anxiety crisis. There's other people for that job, right? So find your other, like I go to tier two for that, right? So, but see, I've got people in my tier two that'll be like, hey man, whatever you wear is going to be fine. And then also she even said, and she knows me, so she's like, how about that? She suggested this dress and thought it would go, you know, winter or rain or whatever. And then she also said, see, she was able to give me this. She was able to say, it doesn't matter what you wear. You know, and see, then I got, because I got to obsess for 10 minutes, and then I just got to put some stuff in my suitcase and go to sleep and get some sleep, because that's what I really needed. I didn't need to, you know, pull out my whole closet and start, you know, because I don't, and see, there, what is that again? It's the obsession, right? The compulsion. See, I can see it now, because I had to, you know, and I got into that energy, and you know what it feels like. She's like, oh, I'm compulsed. I got, guys, what am I going to wear? And it's the biggest problem in the world, and then it's not going to be right, and then they're going to think I'm, you know, whatever. And then it was really, and the energy was like this, and you call, and it's like, whoa, man. And see, and that's what Roseanne was, and that's when you can dial it down. Like, that's what she was talking about when she talked about our compulsive energy. And the thing that I think is miraculous about that was 1963, right? 63 or 4. She had a dial on compulsive energy in 1963, and I literally believe, like, my spiritual experience with that whole compulsive thing is that she just did that just for me, so that I could be able to go from up here to down here without a food, a drink, or a cigarette, you know, or definitely without my drug of choice, which was food. Because the food always had, when I would be up there, the food had to take me, that's how I got down, was with the food, you know? And so I just think that is just the most amazing, beautiful thing in the world. We talked a little bit last night about, did I have a little note? Yeah. We talked a little bit about the open mind. And this little book, this is just a teeny tiny, which I'm going to even, when I say it's a small print book, this is a 12 and 12 of AA. It's just a smaller version of that. And the thing that I have that I wanted to share with you in here, because I just think it's interesting that it says the word open mind in two times in one sentence. All you really need, and this is in step two, page 26 of the AA 12 and 12, all you really need is a truly open mind. Just resign from the debating society and quit bothering yourself with such deep questions as whether it was the hen or the egg that came first. And then it says again I say, all you need is an open mind. So I looked up a little bit about what an open mind was. And an open mind is unprejudiced. Like, one of the synonyms that it says in the dictionary is that that we're unprejudiced. So when we have an open mind, we want to be and that means unprejudiced against me, against ourselves, against our fellows, against other parts of the disease. Like, can you imagine what it would look like and be like and feel like if you had no prejudice? You know, and I like to give a little example with this too, and I won't go too far into telling you about my Aunt Bee, but she's awesome, and she lives in East Tennessee. And my Aunt Bee is a, and there's no other way to tell this story without telling you that she is a right-winged Republican, and she has a gun in the trunk of her Buick. You just have to kind of paint the picture of Aunt Bee, right? Like, and she and I love her to death, right? And when my husband and I had both lost our mothers way too early, and my beautiful Aunt Bee decided, and she never would, because we don't talk about feelings in our family or politics or anything. We don't talk about anything in our family. But she had obviously made an internal gesture that she was going to be our mother. And it was the most beautiful thing. And again, I got to meet that. And she would call my then husband on his cell phone, and he would be, and he would call me because he is a traveling salesman. And he would call me up and he would go, "Your Aunt B just called. I couldn't understand a word that she said, you know, Steve, honey, how you do?" You know, she's very Southern and had a very thick jaw, but she would call, and she would call him once a week on his cell phone. He goes, "I just kept going, yeah, Aunt B," you know, like, you just couldn't understand anything she said. Well, I did this play, and it was a one-person play, and it was a very, and I'm not going to talk about politics at all, I'm just going to tell you that I played a kind of left-leaning person who, well, it was so far, it was the opposite of my Aunt B. And when my Aunt B said, like, "Well, honey, this is really important to you, and I prayed about it, and I know it might not be my politics, but I'm just going to come and support you," I was like, "Oh, God, don't do it, you know, no! Please don't come and support me." But I don't tell people what to do, and I thought, well, you know, so the way that I talk about, like, what an open mind, and then there was about, and again, it's neither here nor there, it's just part of the story. I have four people there that day. They've all heard about my Aunt B. They all happen to be gay men in musical theater. They happen to be my best friends, and they all wanted to meet Aunt B. So, in addition to seeing a play, which I'm quite certain either shortened her life or made the hair on the, like, I can't even imagine what she was feeling, because we didn't talk about it. And this is the thing, and this is what I think is really important about the program. We focused on, my Aunt B and I love each other, and we focus on what we have in common, right? And you see where I'm going with this. We focus on the love that we have for each other. We focus on being in community with each other. I'm her kids, because I don't have children, and her children and their children. One of them came out to stay with me for 10 days last summer. I spoiled that kid. I mean, it was awesome, right? Because we concentrate on our good, and we don't concentrate on our differences. And I learned how to do that here, you know? And Aunt B didn't only come to that play one night. She came back the second night. She came back, and I know it wasn't her thing, right? And then she made gravy and biscuits for all my gay boyfriends. And I could tell, because she just had this look, and I didn't know till they had all left. And she, not only did she do that, you guys, like, when one of them lost their mom, she said, "Well, give me his address." She wrote him a card. Like, she loves him. My Aunt B had never seen a gay person, right? They leave, and they kiss her. They're hugging her. They're loving on her. And I see she's a little panicked. She's cooking, right? Oh, here's some more gravy and biscuits. And they left, and she sit down, and she's fanning herself, and she's like, "Well, sis," that's what she calls me. She goes, "I've never seen a gay person." And I was like, see, that's open-minded. That long little story was to tell you that my Aunt B is open-minded. She might be a lot of other things as well. But Aunt B has got open-minded down. She loves me. She supports me. She went way out of her comfort zone. And see, she's in her, and we all, and when we think we're too old to change our ways and our being, you know, Aunt B's 68 years old, you know? She was able to, and I know some of you maybe, I get it, okay, we're older. Some of you may be older, younger, whatever, right? I hear you all, I see you, I can see you. You're not behind a curtain. I see you. Yep, some are older, some are younger, but I'm saying she's not too old to change. Like, she changed that. She blew open her world in order to love me, right? It was so important for her to love me that she was willing to put a lifetime of prejudice right over here. I think that's one of the most beautiful things I've ever... So again, is it because we sat and hammered it out and somebody won the political fight? Absolutely not. It is because two people who loved each other were able to set aside history and belief and resentment and fear and be open-minded. And we have one of the most gorgeous relationships. It's such a beautiful relationship to me. And we have absolutely nothing in common except our love for each other And that's just so, and she's helping me plan my 50th birthday party next year. We're going to Dollywood if anybody wants to come with us. That's what's happening. Next September. Yeah, all I say again is that you really need to have an open mind. Okay, so last thing I'm going to talk about a little bit tonight is our, and I think this is going to help, this is, okay, I don't know if it's going to help you. I'm telling you, it's one of the, because I have all these little things in my book, and this was one of the last things that I always go to. Like when I'm having problems with my food, excuse me, I don't read, like I don't write about my food. So, and you know how we get all like, I'll call our sponsor. We're like, I know I need to write about my, I know I need to. And so it's like, no, you don't. No, let's put that focus. Let's, because I would say like, oh, I know I need to write about why I ate, blah, 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 blah. No, 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 no. You know, and then, because Judy would say, no, let's read the traditions. Like, right, I, when we went through the steps the first time, and then I want to just keep talking about my food, keep talking about my food, keep talking about my food, or what you eat, or how I eat, or how you do it. And that, she'd be like, so we started talking about the traditions. And you guys, I heard a little bit of that last night, because you guys seem to be up in the Pacific Northwest area a little more forward thinking about the whole like focus, like it's not what we focus on in a meeting is not our problems, right? I heard that in the format of your meeting, and I absolutely loved it, that the 12 steps and the 12 tradition principles should be the focus of our meeting. That's the little thing that I'm looking for, because that that absolutely, here it is, Wanda. Just this last little paragraph, and then we're going to close.
Tradition 5 reminds us that our recovery doesn't come from simply discussing our problems with each other. It is in the OA message, in our steps and traditions, that we find solutions to our problems. Living by these principles has saved our lives. Honesty, hope, faith, courage, integrity, willingness, humility, self-discipline, love, perseverance, spiritual awareness, service, unity, trust, open-mindedness, responsibility, acceptance, equality, and fellowship. These 12 steps and 12 tradition principles, rather than our problems, should be the focus of every OA meeting.
So what Judy, and I heard that last night in your format in that meeting, and it was so valuable to me. So Judy told me whenever I wanted to talk about my food, which was all the time, Judy would ask me how, we would talk about these principles. How were you honest today? How did you have hope today? Tell me how you used your faith today. Tell me how you used your courage today. Did you have integrity today? Were you willing today? Were you humble? Did you practice self-discipline, love, perseverance, spiritual awareness, service, unity, trust, open-mindedness? There it is. Responsibility, acceptance. So I started talking about these things, and here's the thing. It's just exactly like, and I think this is a beautiful thing, because this is the other, I'm going to the last thing, and that's acceptance, right? And it's not the big, like, and acceptance is the answer to all of our problems today. That's huge. I love it. It's awesome, and it's true. What really blew my mind about this little story is a couple pages over in the same story, acceptance was the answer, 419 of the fourth edition of the big book. When I focus on what's good today, I have a good day. When I focus on what's bad, I have a bad day. If I focus on a problem, the problem increases. If I focus on the answer increases. That seems like the simplest thing you've ever heard in your life. That has been the greatest truth for me, because my brain will take whatever that problem is and make it like bigger and bigger and bigger, even if it's about what to wear, even if it's about what to eat for dinner, even if it's about what, no matter what it is, it'll just grow, right? And then I just have to circumvent it. And that's why we're here too, by the way. If you can't do that by yourself, that's why you make a phone call, you know? And see, and I don't know if I'm when people say, well, the phone's not my thing. And I used to try to really convince people like that. And I think that's what's changed for me. And I don't know if it's made my program a lot more spiritual. I'll tell you that. Because, see, I used to try to, like, the used car sales. I used to sponsor, like, a used car salesman. Let me convince you. let me convince you. And I had a lot more energy to do that when I was younger. Number one, I don't have that kind of energy today. And number two, I don't want to try to convince you of anything. I'm not trying to sell you my program, right? I'm trying to tell you what changed my world and what made me useful. How did I become useful? How did somebody who slept all day and ate all night become a useful member of society? And it's Overeaters Anonymous. And I can tell you, I wish I had a different story to my, I wish my story had a different, you know, because I wish I was famous. I wish I was on TV, right? I didn't get all the, I got this. This is what I got. And you know what? That is A-okay with me. I get to talk, people clap. It's kind of the same thing, right? Be careful what you wish for. Be careful what you wish for, because I got it. It just didn't look the way I wanted it to look, right? But I got it. I got what I wanted. So see, when you really, it's all about perception. Maybe you need to be really more specific about what you're looking for. You know? So I just think that's a that beautiful, simple, if I focus on the problem increases. If I focus on the solution increases. And I just can't think of a better way. I don't know what we're going to talk about in the morning, but I know, I'll tell you one thing that I know for sure that it's going to have is some questions, and I don't want you to write questions, and I don't know how long I have, so I'll figure out how much time we're going to devote, but what I would like, just for a lot of reasons, is for, so think about if you do have any kind of question, or just about, or anything that you want to say, think about that, because I would like it to you to come to the podium and ask the question, you know, if you have something to ask of me, or of the group, or whatever, because I like to, I think that's a much more powerful way to interact than on paper, you know, that's the way I like to do it anyway. And again, I can't tell you how much this weekend means to me, and I don't know sometimes if I've said, you know, I don't know, good, bad, or indifferent, but I can tell you that I'm really, really grateful to be here, and it's a true pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.